copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
I understood from the task I got assigned to that I provide you with two things. Maybe I'm the only one who read it. But I prepared a paper for you, which you got sent. And thank you. Some already have responded to that paper in a very positive manner. I tried to include various materials which I read. And some of it is fantastic stuff from OM. I actually hope, Loris, that you know that paper, which I'm actually using here a lot, about mobilizing youth and partnering with them. So I put lots of traits of millennials in there, some of the characteristics we find worldwide, and hoping that it's going to help us as we engage with the young generation, try to mobilize them. But then, next to it, I use that as a foundation, so I hope you have read it before, because what I'm going to do here, I'm not touching that paper. I know Luke is going to be very disappointed with that, because he has lots of questions on that. But later in the Q&A, I'd like to encourage you to then raise your questions, and also debate me on the things that I have, submitted to you guys. What I was asked to do is try and talk on this topic for a few minutes and also share from my own experience. And also, I did finish my master's on Europe with my fantastic tutor, Jim Memory. I owe him that I finished my master's last year. But so I had the chance of doing my dissertation on youth and mobilization in Europe. So you're going to get some of the insights which I've gained there. Which maybe you have some reflection there, also some similarities, or you can apply it to your own context. So youth and missions is the topic and the passion of mine. And when we look at the world, how it has been changing, we look at 1950 when we had about 2.5 billion people, and out of it we had about 721 million in the age range of about 14 to 24 years of age, right? And we're expecting that by 2050 we're actually going to hit the 2 billion young people in the world. It's most of our countries in Africa and other way, they have more than 50% of young people like under the age of 25. So this is huge. Well, we have talked about this before. Demographic changes in Europe, we are getting old. This is the future of what we are dealing with. So how are we prepared to invest into these guys? It says here that these young people are the future. Their choices, their ideas, and their innovations will transform the world, and depends on us how will we integrate them into our churches, into our ministries, into our mission agencies. And there is lots of endeavor. Around Europe, we have about 20 million evangelicals, and we estimate about 1.8 million are children and youth in the evangelical scene in Europe. There are some statistics to it. Actually, when we look at Europe, there's hardly any research done on the evangelical community as such. We talk about millions here, but actually estimating who is out there is actually very hard. We just, I presented last year the first research on how do young people come to faith in Europe, because there's a study in Northern Ireland done for the first time. But so we're still breaking grounds here as we are trying to estimate. Well, we don't always have the actual figures. My friends from Youthscape in Luton, London, published their first research in December on the landscape, the churchscape, actually, in the UK. And they interviewed 2,500 churches from all across the denominations. And this is what they found out. 92% of the churches offer children's work, while only 71 do youth work. Sure, but in general, from the 2,500 churches that had surveyed, only 50% of them had any youth work going. So it's a huge, when we talk about today mobilizing young Europeans for missions, we talk about tiny numbers in general. Of course, the church is losing big numbers on children and youth in general. So then when we think about who do we want, to recruit for missions, we're talking about tiny percentages here. Yeah, so that is the vast need. And then in the, I will include the survey with the presentation for you guys to have, because I just think it's so fascinating and heartbreaking. It's called Losing Heart, which I had also, if you had said, I did the outline for you. And then out of these churches, especially the small churches, 41% said their youth work was ineffective. So we're already talking about tiny number. I mean, half the churches offer youth work. Nearly half of them say it's irrelevant what we do. So, you know, where are we at in Europe? I mean, we talked about this yesterday also with John Lennox in the morning. You know, we are at a critical stage in Europe, and it should awaken us. It should break our hearts. It should get us onto our knees. And then the next horrific fact, which I got out of that survey, and I think I would love to do that across Europe. So I'm not sure if there are any PhD or master students here who would like to pursue that topic, because I think there are some similarities, especially when I compare that to Germany and other nations where it's even worse number-wise. 50% of the churches surveyed regularly discuss the basic faith, beliefs of the Christian faith with young people. So we hardly open the Bible in our youth work anymore. Missions is hardly mentioned in any of these churches. We just do lots of fun and entertainment with young people in our churches. And I think this is just heartbreaking. It should, help us to kick our youth leaders and mission leaders into the butt and say, let's do stuff here for the young ones. So I used the picture as well. I didn't know that ELF likes that picture too. But the Bible has become just one truth among many. And for a young person today, it is very likely and very possible to have two different truths next to each other, which are completely in an anti-correlation. It doesn't make any sense, but for them, in their mind, they don't differentiate. They just accept two truths as the same and just go with that. So that makes it so hard for us, even when we talk about biblical foundations and so on. So what does it need from us and the young people? I mean, that we need to, I think, we need to have a revolution again of love and dedication to the young generation, our churches, that who are the ones we filter at the end and get into our mission ministries and so on. We need to start at a very young age, and we have to be committed to that. I think I'm encouraging youth leaders, we're starting learning communities around Europe now for youth leaders, and saying we need to start early with mission preparation. It doesn't just start when you're 18 and you're looking for your calling in life and what shall I do. So mobilizing and partnering, that was these are the two keywords given to me. And I will not, can't answer it in depth, but I was like wondering, you know, how do we mobilize today? When you reflect on your mission agencies, your youth organizations, on what are some of the tools you use, and how effective do you rate them to be? Because which I mentioned in my PDF, which I sent to you, it is so much more today about peer recruitment. You need young people to recruit young people. This is the highest attraction you can have in mission agencies. So don't, you know, put the older next to the younger at a booth. You know, otherwise, this is not the same dynamic here, what we need to do. And so what are some of your, you know, successful strategies? I would love to hear that. Maybe there's a chance also later to discuss that, and tomorrow we have time with our learning community studies. But what works for you? Because often we hear all about what does not work for you, but actually I think, you know, we have so many resources and ideas in the room. So peer mobilization. And also I put in mobilize and prepare. It's one thing to recruit them, but it's another to actually prepare them on that journey. And I'm pleading with you today. That's my only plea today, is that we go on a journey with a young person. Once from the first time they indicate an interest until they actually have reached, maybe not even your organization, it takes them years. I'm going to prove my point in a minute. And partnering, because I think often we recruit and we mobilize, but then we still have this top-bottom thing and say, you know, oh, you're too young. I mean, I hear from the Eastern European churches sometimes, you have to be 40 before you can actually take any responsibility in church. You have to prove first. I think, oh my goodness, that is not a younger leader anymore. When we start working with them, you know, they're already old and set in their ways. We need to start much, much earlier, and we need to use the young people. And I mean, we have loads of encouragement in the Bible of younger leaders, so I don't need to prove to you how important it is. But, you know, God is loving and trusting a young generation to change the world. And I've mentioned a few examples in my paper, like Uber and Airbnb and other stuff. You know, innovative young leaders are doing amazing stuff and are, you know, so passionate about social justice and so on. But for us, of course, it's more important to get them into missions. And I think the big thing for us is, what do we do to mentor them into missions? How is it that we come, as Ole Magnus here says, always to be an alongsider to the young person? Because mentoring, you can define it as you like, but it is that journeying with someone until they reach that point, and even beside that. I did some surveys, asked them about mentors, and so many of them have indicated, you know, we love to have mentors. And I'm really excited that some of the mission agencies now I've been dealing with, like WEC Switzerland, I know Global Connections in the UK, they're starting actually to have a person appointed to be the missions mentor. So once you call and you say, I'm interested in that region, they immediately make sure that they ask you, would you like me to help you on that journey? I mean, it takes energy, it takes time, it takes money and resources. But I think this is going to be the future, that we need to mentor young people into taking the next steps. I love to use the plane illustration that, you know, we have the mission, we set out as a big bait for them, you know, they're going to buy into the big vision, they're very sacrificial, they take risks, these young ones, but then the maturity needs to follow, and they won't get there just on their own, but they need someone to do that. And if you know me, you know this is one of my favorite slides. And in discipleship across Europe and the world, we talk about four stages, but winning, building, equipping and multiplying. And for me, this is also not just about evangelizing and them helping them to have a foundation. Scripture is out there. We equip when we send them on short-term missions, and hopefully in the end, they're going to multiply and actually become disciple makers themselves. I think that's also part of the mobilization in here. We win them into our missions network. Are we willing to help them go through? What about the ones who return from our outreaches? Are we integrating them? Are we willing to set up learning communities for them, as young people need to mix with young people? This is where they learn best. And I, through my master dissertation, I interviewed 150 youth leaders who came to the Mission at Youth Leaders track at the last two conferences. And you can talk with Helder about Mission at how it's going on. But, you know, mobilizing thousands of young ones, that is the dream for missions. And how does it look like? And so most of them said, you know, someone asked me, a leader asked me, approached me to do a certain job, like in that youth ministry, and he invested into me, so I stayed on the journey. Michael Oh, who was here 2 years ago, he said 60% of all leaders do not finish. And I wonder how high that percentage is among the younger leaders, even more, because they don't have any more of that stickability. They don't know where to go, and then they just take on another role, or they're frustrated with their own incompetencies and so on. So I just want to share a bit of what I found out in my dissertation last year. We did four MissionNet conferences until now, and I have to say, sadly, I tried to look at other youth mission conferences worldwide, and I love Urbana and Zima, and I went to various of these, but none of them actually has done any surveys on recruiting and mobilizing is great. You know, Urbana has sent 300,000 students into missions, but we have no follow-up if they actually got there. So I'm challenging all the mission leaders at the moment, saying, I want to have your facts and figures. How big is your impact actually, really? And are there actually some missing links between having a calling and getting it, you know, getting inspired and actually then going through? So you see that. So I looked at people who have been already to two conferences to see, has there been any change? You know, because we think about 5 days, or you have your mission day events. You know, we just talked about GoFest in the UK just happened. You know, what has happened? Are there any steps as follow-up? And one of my guys in 3DM UK said, if you have nothing in place within the first 72 hours after an event, don't do anything. You know, so what kind of planning is there? If you have no follow-up in place, you shouldn't do anything. So I looked at why do young people come to a missions conference? And actually I found out they don't come for missions. And that's a sad thing for us. We think, oh my goodness, we have missions in the title, you know? But actually they come, I mean, because they want to meet new friends. They want to see the speakers. They, you know, want to get encouragement for their faith. So we're dealing with a generation who hears that they just get dragged on by their friends, but actually is now, you know, trying to help them their cognitive development, saying, actually, you're God, you have a place in this world to bring about a change. But it's very frustrating that we think, whoa, you know, everyone comes to our conference and just thinks they're ready to go into missions. And actually, you realize that when you had to look at it, let me just go through, that it takes longer. They had... We actually grouped them in the end. They gave various, they gave their motivation actually as open choices. Okay. So then out of this, we grouped it, yeah.
And mission seekers, those are those who are...
Yeah, exactly. They are the ones who come and they go into your exhibition and say, what have you got? You know, I have a year spare, after my whatever gap year, where can I go? But we think we're going to recruit, you know, when we have 3,000 missionaries, we think, oh, 3,000 missionaries. No, you talk about a small percentage first, and then you hope that God is actually getting through. So just, I was trying to see, you know, are there any cognitive changes? And in the end, I'm interested in behavioral changes. I'm interested in do we talk about mission and lifestyle in our conferences? Or does it actually have any impact on them? Do they give more money to missions? Do they have a better understanding of missions? Or, sir, it's now hard for you to see, because this is now very fast, and even Jim and I sometimes had difficulties reading my graphics, but... from the ones what we found is that like 46% said, oh, we understand a mission and lifestyle more, or my view on missions changed. So as a result, they were buying mission books and were reading it, which they had never done before. Like saying, you know, it was brought home to me at the missionary conference, everyone who does not like missions is strange. No, that I'm strange because I like missions. I mean, the other way around, you know, that I'm no longer strange because I am interested in missions. And everyone else should be. So that kind of, you know, confidence they build up. I don't want to go to Africa. I felt if I give God one finger, he will take my whole hand. But mission had changed my life. I realized I cannot be a Christian and not be a missionary. So we had loads of these stories come in. You know, that the Bible reading increased by over 50% by people who made a commitment and mission that actually followed through. We have, you know, they came for confirmation and encouragement. And 9 out of the 12 I interviewed said this is what they got out of the conference, and that it helped them to actually become more radical. And actually, we found people becoming Christians at a missions conference. I think, goodness, you should come, be prepared for missions. But actually, quite a few of them made a first time ever commitment to God. So what I've been really fascinated with is the change of roles. And that is probably what I think I'm hitting home here, that you need to journey for people, even sometimes for years. I look at 2007 when we did the first mission at conference, and we had, like, you know, looking at the participants, they came as participants to a service team because it was cheaper. But out of it now, 4 conferences later, they come back as missionaries. You know, so of course not everyone, but you see there is a tendency to actually, I don't know, upgrade is the wrong word, but to develop, you know, to take on responsibility, say, you know, I want to be part of the big picture. And what I learned out of it, and I make sure that I keep in my time, is that when we teach them cognitively and we help them to take practical steps, actually they come back for other reasons. So in your mission agency, would they come back and do a short-term outreach? They have first been at your seminar, and then, you know, there's a progression here, but are you willing to walk that progression with them? And that's probably the ultimate challenge for us. So I asked them, you know, has it got any practical implications for you? And they started justice projects back home. Sadly, I mean, I had to estimate that they would go into mission agencies they got to know during MissionNet, but most of them just did their own thing. I mean, the refugee crisis last year hit us massively. These young ones just packed their bags and joined OM and others, just just arrived at the back, at the borders of Greece, Macedonia, whatsoever, just turned up and said, I'm here, I'm going to give 2 weeks of my time just to serve the poor and needy. And the mission agencies are like, where are these guys? We thought they're committed. You know, they signed up for a short term. They just do their own thing. You know, so it's amazing. So let me just... I go next one here, and you can just have it later if you wanted to. I also saw that as a consequence that they start investing into others. So they have been mentored, and now they mentor others. They have been asked to become youth leaders in their churches. Church involvement rose also by 50%. So, you know, what does it say then? How can we foster that mentoring community then around here? Prayer. And so, and I'm going to just finish that one. That was my last one here. Someone asked me to join, I got invited. It always depended on the leader. Everyone I asked was asked to come somewhere. They would never come just out of the ordinary, except the pure, few ignorant ones, you know? But everyone came because someone asked you to join. People walk the journey with me. I need like-minded people I can pray and read the Bible with. Follow-up comes only when you have decisions and steps in place. Offering training on evangelism and missions, that was one of the biggest outcomes. They're saying, if you offer me something, I take it on. Approach young people concretely. You know, talk about their calling, not about your mission agenda. Don't think primarily about growing your missions, but growing the kingdom of God among the young leaders. And then, actually, we have seen that they actually come back to your mission agency because they have seen you investing into them. So that's my time. I'm up. And just the question for you, you know, where are you at in your mission agency? What can you do to take next steps? I'm happy to discuss that later with you. Thank you.